Alright, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Tornado of Tony Pennycal.
And Psychic Tom Badgett with Crystal Ball ready to go.
And we got so much to talk about, lots of events, previous and upcoming. We had a big Saturday for boxing last week, and also we had Bellator on Friday and UFC on Sunday. So lots of stuff to talk about. Plus, we got upcoming stuff.
There were some good fights on Saturday.
Yes, there were.
That Rios knockout one, that was brutal.
That was brutal. You know what? I said, you know, going into the fight, I mean, Brandon Rios, as we discussed, Brandon Rios is going to Brandon Rios. That's how he's going to be Brandon Rios. But the problem is, Brandon Rios' best days are past. Brandon Rios was better as a lightweight, not a welterweight. You know, and that style does not lead to longevity. That's a fact, you know, not an opinion. So, going into the fight, I'm like, I didn't see, you know, his chances as very good. And I didn't see his chances of going the distance as very good. And kind of accurate on both accounts. And that knockout was pretty devastating. And I remember watching the fight with my dad, and when he got up, first of all, we didn't think he was going to get up. And he, you know, a lot of guts getting to his feet. He wobbled like my toddler godson when I was over his house last week. They had about the similar walk gait going, right? And Penny Bayless, great stoppage, you know? And Rios, when they were doing that post-fight interview, he was sputtering like a guy that just had a bottle of Jack Daniels. And he's like, oh, my corner stopped the fight. No, they didn't. No, they did not. The referee stopped the fight, and thank God he did.
Yeah.
But the real entertainment interview was Garcia and Sean Porter.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And you know what? Now, was Sean Porter somewhat out of line? Yeah, maybe you could say yes, maybe you could say no, but you know what? It was smart. But here's the thing. Sean Porter's a hell of a fighter. Sean Porter wants big fights. You can't fault the guy for that. He's calling out Keith Thurman. He's calling out Danny Garcia. He'll call out Errol Spence. He'll call out Adrian Broner. The man wants fights that are going to pay him money. And, hey, who doesn't want that? He wants to fight the best. He wants his shot at the limelight. And, that, hey, you can't fault him for that. And, now, say they sign a fight, him and Garcia. And, you know, casual fans that maybe watch that fight, or maybe casual fans that maybe just saw that interview on YouTube because their friends said, yo, check out this knockout and check out this interview. They're going to say, oh, shit, they're fighting now? I want to watch that. That will sell
tickets. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of other good fights. I mean, for boxing, I mean, between Fox and Showtime, there was, like, what, 5 hours worth of fights on that night? From, like, 8 to 1?
Yep. I didn't get to watch any of it, unfortunately. But Danny Garcia had a great night. Also, David Benavidez stayed undefeated against Ronald Gavril.
He looked fantastic. I mean, that was a close fight the first time, but, I mean, he really, really showed his skills. And, you know, his opponent showed a hell of a chin. He took the bomb.
Right. Then we had Yordinus Yugas beating the new Ray Robinson.
Yeah.
That was kind of a shocker.
I mean, he bombed him pretty good. I mean, he had him down early. And then, I mean, he caught him with a pretty devastating right hand. And then he got him on the ropes. And, you know, one thing I always tell people that I train, when you get a guy on the ropes like that, and you can see he's got his earmuffs up, you let your hands go. Because even if your punches are only hitting gloves, if it's snapping him back, even if they're being blocked, a good chance you're going to get a referee stoppage.
And a boy, Edwin Rodriguez. Got another win. He's 29-2 going in. 30-2 now. And beat Lionel Thompson, who was 19-4. 4 going in.
Also on the box card, the main event on that card was Devin Alexander, you know, making his comeback from, you know, his sabbatical, you know, where he was battling an issue with prescription pills. And kudos to him for being honest with his challenges, being kudos to him for fighting that demon that takes, you know, a lot of people down, and coming back and fighting a very successful fight. Unfortunately, two of the judges didn't think so, and in his fight with Victor Ortiz, which I had Alexander, you know, win.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah,
Victor Ortiz versus Devin Alexander was a heck of a fight.
And competing at a high level after, you know, having fought and hopefully beaten for good that type of demon, you know, anything right now else is icing on the cake.
True, yeah. Devin Alexander versus Victor Ortiz was a big draw over the weekend. Main event down there in El Paso, Texas. And Ortiz is his third draw. For Alexander, it's his first. And I'm sure they'll have a rematch to see who really won. But
I mean, it wasn't a terrible fight, so it's not like, oh, no, a rematch. But the fact that, you know, Alexander had a victory that month was, you know, always when there's a, you know, judging like that, it's always, you know, kind of like a black eye on the sport.
Okay.
I want to mention some names in the history of boxing, and I want you to tell me if you've heard of any of these names. And I'm going to start off with the Brown Bomber, Joe Lewis.
All right, that's
check.
Heard of him.
Okay, check. How about a fighter by the name of Tammy Moriello?
Nope, never heard of him.
How about you,
Mr.
Gentleman?
No, sir.
Okay, I'll
be honest.
Tammy Moriello, was before any of our time, but he was one of, as they called him, Joe Lewis's Bum of the Month Club. Joe Lewis knocked him out one round. Now, in order to get that fight with the Brown Bomber, Tammy Moriello beat a fighter by the name of Tony Sisco. Anybody ever hear of him?
Yes.
Yeah, you know me now.
Okay. I've never met Tony Sisco. Tony Sisco passed away when he was 59 years old. But I was just having dinner with his brother, who's still alive at 94, Hank Sisco. Hank, as you all know and love, trained with somebody that we all might be familiar with in Rocky Marciano.
Yep. Heard of him. I heard of that guy.
So that would put you 3 degrees away, 3 degrees of separation from The Rock himself. Wow, I like that. They say everyone in the world 6 degrees. I guess now we are 4 degrees.
Well, actually, I don't know what's Rich, but I mean, Rich was on calls with Rocky's nephew, Rich, or Dennis.
Yeah, and what's his name, too? His best friend, Nikki Gold. Was it Nikki Gold?
Yeah, Nikki. We had
Nikki Sylvester.
Nikki Sylvester. We had Lou Duval, when Lou was still alive.
Rich, that'll put you 2 degrees.
And Sylvester, Nikki, I think he's gone. So, no going back there.
I first came in contact with Dennis back in 2009, before I came up to that game in Boston. And that's when I was getting the Rocky Marciano shirt. That's when I got in touch with Dennis online. Got you doing their website, and that's when you said, "Hi, you know, podcast. Would you like to interview Rocky's friend, Nikki Sylvester?" We're like, "Yeah." How about Lou Duva? We're like, "Yeah." He's like, "Who else you got?"
Rocky's brother Peter was pretty cool. I mean, what a nice guy he
even though Mickey Sylvester used to rip into him a lot.
Yeah, Dennis didn't like him either for a lot of reasons, but what can you do?
Yeah.
You know, you can pick your friends, but not your family.
Exactly. Well, like I said, I remember when we were going to Mickey Sylvester that time, and he's like, yeah, Roger won that one when he beat Jersey Joe, and there was a lot more than the locker room. And Peter is a goofy kid, you know, he's climbing on the locker room. Well, what do you want him to do?
Yeah.
You know, he's being a kid.
At least he wasn't like the other guy's kids who punched the opponent in the nuts when he was on the weigh-in scale.
Yeah, that's not too good, you know?
There's the worst kids out there. Anyway, we got some fights coming up this weekend, too. Not many, actually. Next weekend is the big one. March 3rd. We've got a lot going on, but... See, this weekend we've got some crazy names. One, Francisco Estrada versus Wisoxil Wangek. I don't even know how you pronounce that one. Let me get the actual schedule in front of me instead of the main front page. Tonight we have Jesus Fight of the Week right away. Jesus Alvarez Rodriguez, 15-3, fighting Virgil Ortiz, 8-0, for a title, too. Jesus might get a title.
But the thing is, you have a Jesus fight of the week, but you also have a Virgil fight of the week.
Yeah, both of them. Well, this guy's V-E-R-G-I-L. Very weird spelling of Virgil. Main event there, Joseph Diaz is undefeated at 25-0, fighting Victor Terrazas, who is 38-4-2. And this is actually on ESPN2. So we can watch it.
Yeah, it's like something ridiculous, like 11:30. I'm like, shit. Can they not do this on a weeknight when I got to get up extra early and go to the city tomorrow?
Right. Well, you know, they don't really put superstars on their cards anymore. It's not that great of a... lineup.
Not like back in the day when you used to have the Tuesday night fights with USA, when you were getting big game fights. I mean, you were getting, like, you had Larry Holmes and George Foreman making their comeback there. You had Arturo Gaspar on the USA Tuesday night fights. Roy Jones even a few times. Vinny Paz, multiple times on Tuesday night fights. Rennie Cabello, I mean, he had a lot of good fighters on Tuesday night fights. World title fights on Tuesday night fights. He had, the knockout of the week, or the power punch of the week, used to be with Sean O'Grady. Then you had your ESPN. Either it used to be on Thursday night, or they used to be on Sunday night. And you were getting these guys like Tommy Morrison. You were getting, Bill and Freddie Pendleton. Roger Mayweather. You were getting good fighters on these cards that people knew. You know, I'll tell you what I think, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, so I'm blue in the face. What I think is really hurting any pay-per-view revenue now is the lack of consistent fights on network TV. Now, they're getting better. But back in the day, what you used to get, even in the waning days of getting boxing on Saturday and Sunday afternoon, you still have... you used to get guys on Tuesday night fights where you were watching their careers progress. Bernard Hopkins, I remember watching him as like a 3-0 pro. Or 3-1, he lost his third ABO. You're watching Roy Jones from his infancy. You're watching the Olympians, David Reed, Fernando Vargas, Antonio Tarver, all those guys. You watch it, start their careers as four-rounders. So by the time they were getting up to HBO, Showtime, and then pay-per-view, you were invested enough in their careers that you were willing to say, yes, I want to pay for this fight on pay-per-view. Oscar De La Hoya made a career off USA Tuesday Night Fight before he arced into HBO on pay-per-view.
Yep, that's the problem. It's a lot of people, experts have said that too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just said it. You're not an expert. I'm the boxing great man boxing.
There you go. Out of other experts, I should have said.
But then it takes like a hardcore fan like me to maybe pull some of my casual fans into wanting to watch that fight. But it would be a much bigger fight if you had more readable access to these fighters from their earlier days.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you, you know, I was young, but I remember the excitement in the going late 70s, early 80s for Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, I remember, you know, that excitement of it was like the 7-Up kid, basically. I remember the excitement of a young Mike Tyson. I mean, I remember being a kid in school and thinking Mike Tyson was going to fight, and we didn't know what the hell we were talking about, but we wanted to talk about watching Mike Tyson because it was like watching a car wreck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody's O's got to go in Bayern, Germany on Saturday as well. We got Callum Smith, 23-0, fighting Nike Holzkin, who's 13-0. And then we get into a big card in Yucatan, Mexico. Elias Espadas in the main event. He's 16-3, fighting Felipe Santos Pedroso, who's 15-3. That's for the vacant WBO Latino middleweight title. But this one's a big surprise on this card. Tyrone Spong, who is probably better known to most people who watch K1 and kickboxing. He's 10-0 as a boxer. And he's fighting Carlos Ailton Nascimento, who is 16-5. And this is for the WBC Latino heavyweight title and the vacant WBO Latino heavyweight title as well. So...
Yes, so we could have a Latino title holder who's not Latino.
It could be, yes.
Got it.
But at least they're fighting in Latin America.
Like the other week, we had four animal middleweight championships between two Australians and Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom, I forgot to tell you this last week. You'll like this. So a few weeks ago, the night before the Super Bowl, my one neighbor owns a sports apparel store at the one mall about 20 minutes from my house, and he messaged me, he goes, yo, can you come help me do a promo? I'm like, yeah, sure, what do you need me to do? I was thinking he wants me to wear some Eagle stuff and everything. He goes, no, he goes, I want you to dress as Rocky, and we're going to build on the underdog team. I'm like, yeah, because I'll do it. He gave me a $100 jersey to stand there and act like an idiot for 2 hours, which I can put free on the cover. So I'm standing there, people are like, you want to see John Black? And the kid comes up, he goes, I want to get my picture with Rocky. And he goes, I'm a professional fighter. I said, oh, really? And he goes, yeah, I'm fighting, and one weekend he's fighting pro, I'm going to be a lot famous. He said, yeah, I'm fighting pro in a week, I'm 9-0. I'm like, oh, shit, you know? I'm like, what's his name? He said, Tyrone Crawley Jr. I said, shit, I remember your father, you know? And I go back to my dad, I'm like, dad,
yeah, with some history.
Yeah.
You know, how crazy is that? You know, because I'm dressed up as Rocky, I'm as a kid, a fighter I used to remember being on, like, Wild World of Sports and shit. Was a shootout. It was between him and John the Beast Mugabe,
Yeah, good stuff.
I mean, it is amazing how many people you can meet at those things. Just sitting right there, walk up to them, start talking.
That's why I like those local cars. Hey, I love going to a good landing station place because they ever have any work. Or, you know, you have the Barclays Center now, Madison Square Garden, Vegas, Staples Center, all those great big places, and the atmosphere is fantastic. But you go to these small local cars, you get to meet so many people, and that's what's cool about it. You know, I was going to Blue Horizon, and I'm outside, you know, meeting little people, talking to people, and, you know, there's this one small, very quiet black guy, you know, he's just sitting up against the wall. So I'm over there talking to him. People are looking at me, talking to him, and they come up to me and said, oh, who was that you were talking to? I said, that's your main event fighter tonight. We used to train together. You know?
Nice.
But it's like, people don't pay you to see this guy fight, but you know. They knew with the Blue Horizon they were going to get a good fight.
He's got to get more fights on network TV. Anyway, I just want to finish. There's a couple more events we got to cover. Big one on HBO. A lot of big names here. A lot of tough matchups. Main event, Wisaxo Wongek. You might not have ever heard of him, but his record is 44-4-1. He's fighting Juan Francisco Estrada, who is 36-2. And it's for the WBC World Super Flyweight title. And we got the IBF World Flyweight title on the line. Donnie Nietes, who is 40 wins, 1 loss, 4 draws, fighting Juan Carlos Raveco, who is 39-3. And then we got one of the guys that was the subject of my very first internet article, a guy named Brian Hawaiian Punch Valoria. 38-5, he is his record. He's fighting Artem Dalekian, who is 15-0, and he's fighting for the vacant WBA World Flyweight title. Well, both of them are. And then we got Carlos Quadras, 36-2-1, fighting Nick Williams Arroyo, who is 16-3, for the vacant WBC Silver Super Flyweight title. Pretty much every single fight except two are for some kind of title here. So we got also Pedro Duran, no relation to Roberto, I don't believe, is 16-0-2, fighting Enrique Tinoco, who is 16-5-3. We got the vacant WBC International Female Light Flyweight title on the line between Louisa Houghton, who is 7-0, and Anahi Torres, who is 16-17-1. And then down in Phoenix, Arizona, on Saturday, we have Alexis Santiago, 21-5-1, fighting Carlos Castro, who's 19-0, for the vacant WBC United States Super Bantamweight title. Co-main event there, Francisco de Vaca, 17-0, fighting Christian Esquivel, who has got 30 wins, 12 losses, 1 draw. A couple more events. Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Main event there, Thomas Cornflake LaManna, 25-2, fighting Gabriel Bracero, who is 24-3. You know, LaManna certainly had a lot of fights for a retired guy. I believe he retired four fights ago. I think after one of his big fights, he said, that's it. And he's had three fights since then. So that was quick. Anyway, LaManna 25-2, Bracero 24-3. That one's for the WBC Fieker Box welterweight title. And then we got co-main event, Larry Pryor, 10-18-0, fighting Alvin Varmal Jr., who's undefeated, 14-0-1. That might be your mismatch of the week right there. Former guest of ours in a big tune-up fight, it looks like. Tommy Renone, 26-8-2, fighting Eduardo Flores, 26-29-3 there. Nothing else really worth mentioning on that card. And we got a big one on Wednesday, right before our next show. I'll get to, if I can find it. There it is. Daniel Roman, 23-2-1, going to Tokyo, Japan to face Ryo Matsumoto, who I'm guessing is from Japan by the last name. He is 21-1, and that's for the WBA World Super Bantamweight title. Co-main event there is Andy Hirayoka, who is 11-0, fighting Fumisuki Kimura, who is 6-2. And pretty much it. So next week for the boxing schedule, another big boxing story this week, Andy Lee retired. He did. He officially retired.
Right. And you know, he's only 33, and for some reason I thought he was older. Well, he's been around a while.
Yeah, and especially a lot of times when guys start young, like, perfect example, imagine how old Canelo's going to seem when he turns 33.
Yeah.
Good point. He's 33? I thought he was like 63. Well, he didn't start turning turn pro when he was 15.
Yeah.
And Tony, I think they found a pair of your old boxing gloves. From AD 120. Have you heard about this? They found that one of the oldest pair of boxing gloves in history, basically. In Italy, in near Hadrian's Wall.
They could be mine.
And they know they're boxing gloves because they're packed with natural material which acted as shock absorbers, and they were made to last. They sit comfortably on a modern hand, and one of them even retains the impression of the knuckles of its ancient wearer. This was 120 AD, so thousands of years ago, really. They're among the latest discoveries at a pre-Hadrianic Roman cavalry barrack, which was found last year beneath the 4th century stone fort of Vindolanda. Pretty crazy stuff. 2,000 years ago. And the finds are in a remarkable state of preservation because they were concealed beneath a concrete floor laid by the Romans about 30 years after the barracks was abandoned, shortly before 120 AD. So the oxygen-free conditions preserved everything. The gloves resemble leather padded bands rather than full hand boxing gloves used today, and they're not a matching pair. But the thrill for the people who found it, I guess, was that they've been repaired. The owner had really wanted to keep them going, so they did their best to repair and patch the gloves. And there's extensive ancient writings about boxing as well, quite a bit from the Greek side, and then the Romans, of course. A lot of boxing history. And this article has a little quote from the philosopher Plato, which is pretty interesting. Plato said, "Surely if we were boxers, we should have been learning to fight for many days before and exercising ourselves in imitating all those blows and wards which we were intending to use in the hour of conflict and in order that we might come as near to reality as possible. Instead of cestuses, we should put on boxing gloves." That's a direct quote from Plato. And in the Roman army, boxing was practiced to promote fighting skills and fitness, and included competitions with spectators. The gloves will be among finds from the barracks displayed at the Vindolanda Site Museum from Tuesday. Excavations resume in April. So there you go. Oldest boxing gloves ever. Pretty crazy. Might be Roy Jones Jr.'s boxing gloves. No. He's still talking about a hybrid fight next. Not sure whether he means because he wants to fight Anderson Silva or some MMA fighter, but it's pretty interesting. Already kind of talked about that last week, but of course, can't go a week without talking about Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Dana White has said recently that He's stripping Connor of the lightweight title officially, and Khabib versus Tony Ferguson is going to decide who gets that title. So, the flip side of that is Connor came out and said, well, I offered to fight Frankie Edgar, and you didn't let me. So, obviously, that's kind of a concern, but... supposedly, also, Floyd said something to piss Connor off. I don't know whether it was the CM Punk thing that went around or what, but Connor says the talks of a rematch are off completely. So, also, Dana White confirmed that they're not talking, but the only way that rematch is happening is if it's in the cage. It's in the UFC.
So, Connor wanted to go back to 145. I didn't hear that.
Supposedly he offered.
That's apparently he wants no part of Khabib.
And we had a big fight night and Bellator card to talk about from last weekend, of course. Big Roy Jones. No, Roy Nelson this time. Roy Jones. You got Roy Jones on the brain. But Roy Nelson, yeah, big country, tried to get the job done in the third. The crowd wanted him to get the win or at least the draw, but he actually made me look like the psychic, Tom, because what did I say? If he gets him in the crucifix, he's got a shot.
And now, you've heard the controversy about Roy Nelson's
toe. No, I have not.
Okay, apparently Meathead was saying that he was calling Roy Nelson a cheater. And I'm thinking, okay, is USADA back in the equation? But he blamed the crucifix on Roy Nelson's toe. He caught in the fence, his big toe. Well, for one thing, that's legal to do that. That's not illegal. But how strong would your toe have to be to hold down a 260-pound man? I mean, that's got to be the strongest toe.
Right.
I've never heard of since Clark Kent changed in the phone. I mean, that's unbelievable. So that's it's the toe controversy. Big toe Nelson. Not big controversy. Yeah, check that story out. Media didn't pick up too many fans with all that complaining. I mean, it was lucky to get that decision.
I've heard of winning by a nose, but not winning by a toe.
Yeah, winning by a toe.
But he didn't win, unfortunately. But actually, it was a pretty good fight for Mitrione up until that third round. Roy kept getting late takedowns, really wasn't doing much with the boxing. Actually, I think he threw a lot more kicks that were dangerous than punches because he just didn't have the reach. And then you got Matt Mitrione, who's acting like he's in a sparring session the whole time, just taking it easy and laying back, landing what he needs to land.
Oh, he looked good. I love his movement. I mean, just good basic boxing.
But there was no urgency, you know. There was no sense of, oh, I'm going to, next punch I land, I'm going to knock him out, you know, because he kept hitting Roy right in the chin and then the face, you know, and the eyes, the nose, everywhere. And Roy just kept on coming and didn't look hurt at all. So it was a tough fight, but Roy just couldn't get enough takedowns, couldn't get the advantage there. He was a little bit gassed, but Mitrione was out of breath too, especially by the end of the third round, he was dead. And then, you know, the crowd just let them have it when they're interviewing Matt Mitrione. Did not agree with the decision at all. He could have got the draw, but yeah, I don't think that he deserved to win. It's tough though, because you know, you get that crucifix move, that's only half the battle. You know, he wasn't throwing too many hard shots from that position. The hardest shots he was throwing were the elbows, and they really weren't, you know, landing to the point where the ref was going to be worried the guy's going to get knocked out if he doesn't stop him. So. Really can't fault either one of them. They put on a good performance, but definitely didn't look like Matt was fighting to win. He's just kind of fighting to finish the fight at some point. So.
And the crowd was not happy.
No, they weren't. And the Pitbull lived up to his family nickname. He's Patricky Ferrieri, finished Derek Campos in the very first round with some brutal punches. 2 minutes and 23 seconds into that one, so that was a quick one.
You know, I was having a debate about that with someone, and the guy I was talking to has a theory that if someone knocks you out and you're having a rematch, that someone is in your head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, yeah, going into that, I mean, you've got to at least have it in the back of your mind. I mean, you're like, it's hard to say as a fighter. As a fighter, you got to go in there confident. But, like, you know, you always have, even Mike Tyson used to say, like, in his prime, he always had night fingers that he got knocked out. From the Hope Buster Douglas, it being true. But we would always say, like, he would wake up and, like, a cold sweat, like, oh my God, I got knocked out, I lost. And then it was like, then you'd have to relax yourself and, you know, focus hard on training. You know, sometimes, I mean, you take a look, and have been a fighter that has been knocked out that came back great to rematch? Absolutely. Take a guy like Floyd Patterson when he fought Ingmar Johansson. You know, yeah, he got knocked down 7 times. And he got up and, you know, got knocked out in the rematch. And then in the rubber match, he scored 2 knockouts. Then you take off the other side, Jersey Joe Wilcott, when he fought Rocky Marciano, he's winning that fight. He gets knocked out cold from a single blow, and he pulled from the first shot to hit him in the second fight, because I think he went in there, you know, with like almost double shot.
Yeah, it depends on the matchup, depends on the styles, depends on a lot of things. We had the co-main event, not the co-main event, but the big female fight on the Bellator card. Heather Hardy got another big win over her fellow former boxer, the Hurricane Juliton, as I was saying, Tony's cousin, the Tornado's cousin. And we also have the Tiny Tornado to talk about later. Tisha Torres.
But you know, Heather really gave it a good run of it on the ground, did everything she could, but she's got to keep working at it. I mean, there were just some basics that were off a bit, but she is rather new to it. But, you know, some of the complaints on the underground about women's MMA, he said it's like going to a strip club and you got to watch the bouncers dance.
That's bad. Well, you know, there is kind of some sexism with the, you know, the expectations that guys have. And, you know, I always look back to the interview or the debate we had with Ice John Scully and Iceman John Scully and drawing a blank there. The MMA guy there.
Was it Ken Shamrock?
Ken Shamrock, yeah. And they were having their big argument over women in boxing and MMA, and John Scully was like, you know, I don't want to see a woman get her face bashed in. I'm sorry, you know. I like to see women look pretty, basically. And, you know, of course, Ken Shamrock basically blasted him back, saying, you know, I've seen tons of tough women fight, and, you know, fight just with guys, and They deserve the respect, and they should have their opportunities, and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, it's very interesting lately that we see this trend of female boxers coming over to MMA, because there is a certain point to what Scully was saying, you know, especially with a sport where the goal is primarily to be punched, you know, to punch the other person in the face repeatedly. In MMA, there's a lot of other stuff, but, you know, when it's just punching in the face, a lot of people don't want to see that. I'm not saying it's a good thing, you know, it's a great mentality to have that you'd rather not see a woman get beat up, but you don't care if a guy gets beat up, but I mean, that's how people are. So, it's just an unfortunate part of that side of the sport. But with this one, Heather Hardy and Anna Juulton, they both came from boxing, so they both basically had a boxing match in a cage. And it was way better suited for Heather because she had the better reach and the better strategy, obviously. But Anna just proved that she's probably better in boxing than MMA. Just, you know, and she had some Taekwondo experience, I believe they said. So that surprised me because she didn't show it. She was pretty much baited right into the Heather's game, so I don't know. They've also, interestingly enough, they've got an agreement to box as well under the Bellator banner, which I never heard of them doing before. I know they've done kickboxing, but I never realized they've had a plan in place to do boxing. So we'll have to keep our eye out for that one. And then we had, I actually watched this one in fast forward because I had it DVR. I was watching something else, and so I went back and watched it at the end, and basically fast-forwarded the whole thing because it was just tactical. You know, Heather had a perfectly tactical fight, and it wasn't very interesting. And that's how it happens sometimes. But you get female and male fights, the same thing happens. It's not just because they're female; it's just because they're new to the sport. You know, they don't even really know what they're capable of. And I, you know, watching a lot of that, I could see opportunities where if they actually knew what they were doing, you know, it could have ended a lot earlier and it would have been a lot more exciting. I think Heather Hardy went for a rear naked choke a couple times and she didn't even know to put the legs in or, you know, how to cinch it up.
A typical beginner move, the headlock. Well, that's a Three Stooges move. It works with the students, but in a real fight, it just, all it's going to do is waste your arms. But did I do it when I first started? Yeah, sure did. And Heather's, I think Heather's got to work with it. And I know that, you know, she seems to be tough as nails coming back from that awful beating she took before. So let's hope she stayed in and really working that ground game.
Yes,
working
sir.
Hard.
How dare you speak ill of the Three Stooges fighting style?
Well, Curly had a good heel kick. That's the one I'd really like to see. Curly's heel kick was just absolute brutal. And then one would shoot through with the eye. Oh, my God.
That's funny. One of my favorite fights of the night, Vadim Nemkov basically peppered Liam McGeary's leg till he couldn't stand on it anymore.
I felt that. I just, even my dog's looking at me like, oh, what are you hurting for? That was brutal.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it just goes to show you, I mean, I say it all the time, leg kicks are so underutilized, and it's everything if you get that front leg, the lead leg of a fighter, to the point where they can't even put weight on it. I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, here's a guy in perfect physical shape, other than his leg, you know, could have gone five rounds if it wasn't for that, and he just can't even stand up. They had to stop it. Wasn't due to
you know, and I don't know if some guys don't work it as much in training. I know Marcus was very brutal about that. And we would, at the end of each night, we would stand there and do leg conditioning where we just bang each other in the thighs. I mean, I'd want to throw up sometimes. it just drills it into you. Check those kicks. And I think a lot of guys think, well, okay, it's just a kick. I can eat it. No.
I saw actually a nice video talking about leg conditioning on YouTube. A guy that calls himself Kwon Kicker, K-W-O-N Kicker, All one word. And you can find him on YouTube. And he'll actually tilt the torso dummy with this plastic base. He'll tilt that forward a little bit, and then he'll kick the actual plastic piece between the dummy and the base. He'll just basically kick the plastic. Don't wrap it up or anything. Just kick that over and over again. And hit it with your shin, hit it with your foot, and it's supposed to, you know, create scar tissue that makes it basically, you know, numb to hard kicks and stuff like that. Throwing them and taking them. So that's one thing you could do. If you don't want to go that route, then, you know, you just basically look at Chris Weidman versus Anderson Silva, and that's the perfect way to check a leg kick. It's just technique. A lot of it's technique and, you know, being quick about taking that leg away, too. Not just lifting it up so the guy hits your knee, but just get that leg right out of the way. Pivot.
Yeah, and I think by the time Lee started to come up with that approach, it was a day late, a dollar short, a little too late. And you know someone's hurt when they start switching your stance.
Right.
And by that time, I just felt it was a matter of time.
And then
when he turned around, he was just about to scream.
Earlier in the night, we had a big knockout. Reginald Carvalho took just 17 seconds to knock out Tom English with a beautiful, I think, straight right. Just popped him clean. And out on the floor, out cold, basically. So, won't go through the entire card there. It's a lot of undercard stuff. But then we had Sunday night's big UFC card from Austin, Texas. Donald Cerrone pulling off the cowboy move. 2 seconds left in the first round. He got the TKO with a lot of punches. And looked good. Looked really good. Yancey was a training partner of his. It doesn't happen a lot that you got guys who are really good friends fighting each other. But they had to do it, and it was in Texas. So, you know, what better place for cowboy to get the win?
Well, I think Yancey picked up a lot of fans. I mean, it'd be hard to cheer against either one of those guys. I mean, just what a classy act, both of them.
And the big heavyweights, Derek Lewis got his fight career back on track with a big knockout win over Marcin Tybura. And it took 2 minutes and 48 seconds into the third round, but the Black Beast got the job done.
And I think he needed that KO on my part. What do you think?
Yeah, Tybura was actually stringing a lot of good shots together and kind of tenderizing him a lot, but you know, Lewis came out in the end and did what he had to do. Another guy, very under the radar, doesn't really get a lot of respect that he deserves. James Vick always gets a chance to fight in Texas when the UFC goes there, but he took out Francisco Trinaldo by unanimous decision. Very crafty fighter there in Francisco. But Vick had the answer all through the whole fight, and he looked good doing it. And we had Curtis Millender beating Thiago Alves. And Millender got the win by knockout in the second round, 4 minutes and 17 seconds in there. And this is a younger prospect that the UFC got in, and I think through the Contender Series. And this kid is just unbelievable as far as, the repertoire of moves he has. It just needs some... I think more experience stringing everything together and being a little bit more accurate, but wow, that knee was a hellish one. And you know, some of the kicks that he could have landed before that.
He's only 33, but the first time I seen him fight, it was the first one of the early King of the Cages that came to Cleveland, and he knocked out one of my training partners, Jeff Cox. Knocked him out in about the first 30 seconds. And that was back in 2005, so Alves has been around for a while. And I think in his prime, he would have figured out this reach disadvantage a lot better than he did, but he just couldn't get it going.
We had Brandon Davis beating Steven Peterson by unanimous decision. Sage Northcutt get back in the win column over Thibault Gaultier. Carlos Diego Ferreira got a knockout over Jared Gordon from punches, 1 minute and 58 seconds into the first round. We had Brian Camozzi getting rear naked choked by Jeff Neal in the fifth fight of the night, 2 minutes and 48 seconds into the first. And the Sanchez fight, Roberto versus Joby, Sanchez versus Sanchez. Rear naked choke got Roberto the win, 1 minute and 50 seconds into the first round there. And as I suspected, they're not related. Sanchez and Sanchez. But they might be starting a law firm. Lucy Pudilova, also in the card. She was the third fight of the night. She got the win over Sarah Morris by unanimous decision. Alex Morono beating Joshua Berkman by guillotine choke in the first round, 2 minutes and 12 seconds into that one. And Oscar Pichota knocked out Tim Williams, 1 minute and 54 seconds into the first round there. And then we got UFC on Fox coming up Saturday from Orlando, Florida, the Amway Center. Josh Emmett versus Jeremy Stevens in the main event there. Josh comes in at 13-1. Stevens comes in at 27-14. We've also got a female fight in the co-main event, first time in a long time. Jessica Andraja, who is 17-6, fighting Tisha the Tiny Tornado Torres, who is 10-1.
Oh, taking my name.
I think she took hers because of the T-O-R-R in her last name. Just a hunch. The Tiny Tornado. And you'd think with that kind of nickname, she'd be doing a lot of more spin moves, but she really doesn't. She doesn't do a lot of that stuff. But, yeah, I'm looking for Jeremy Stevens to really show some improvement. He keeps getting better and better. He's got a lot of exciting moves. Josh Emmett is kind of coming out of nowhere. He's got some great talent. Obviously, he's got some beautiful hooks. Saw him win his last fight by a beautiful knockout from, I think it was a left hook. Could have been right.
Right. Yeah, and that's what makes this main event so intriguing, because Emmett is still really, a great job against Ricardo Lamas, but like you said, he's come out of nowhere. And Stevens has been around, not only these guys around a long time, but he seems to have evolved somewhat. In his early days, he was just coming at you, hands down in his hips, just throwing bombs. Sometimes it works, sometimes it didn't, so we'll see where he's at.
Yeah, and then we got Tisha versus Jessica in the co-main event. Jessica has a little bit more experience, but Tisha has just the one loss. And has looked really good since she was on The Ultimate Fighter, and just walked right into the UFC, and obviously she's very well conditioned. Looks like a gymnast, you know, if you ever see her working out. Just totally, a lot of muscles. And she's definitely got a lot of technical skills. Andrade, like I said, has a little bit more experience, but she's also got five more losses. So who knows where this one's going to go, but it's definitely a great co-main event for this Florida fight card. And then we've got OSP, Ovince St. Pro, 22-10, fighting Ilir Latifi, 13-5. Both of these guys are capable of putting on a good fight, but, you know, they've also been in sloppy, ugly wars, so who knows what we're going to expect on this one, either. And then we've got the ever-tough Mike Perry, 11-2. Hopefully he's developed some defense, because in his last fight, it was nothing but hands by his waist, a slugfest. He's fighting Max Griffin, who's 13-4. Don't know a lot
about him. Okay, you really think that you can develop your defense in a month and a half?
We'll see.
I don't know, Tony. Weigh in on this.
A month and a half? I've been back for 23. So,
you can pick things up, but, you know, until you really do things repetitively over and over and over, slowly, and then pick up the speed until it's second nature, that's where everything comes in. You know, it's like Trump trying to hit a major league fastball. You go out and try to hit a major league, even if you've been playing T-ball in little league whole life. Like, if I played little league trying to hit a major league fastball right now, I'm not going to be able to do it. I got to learn to, you know, pick up the spin of the ball, pick up the speed of the ball, and then learn to make my swing. You know, it's with, you know, practice over and over and over and over and over until that fastball at 95 miles an hour is slowing down, you know? That's the same thing with a punch. You have to see it coming at you. You have to see, you know, the twitch of the shoulders. You know, you don't, you have to, you know, be able to read what's a feint, what's coming at you. The different speeds you're going to come at. Because a great fighter will vary his speeds, you know. He might touch you with a jab and then laser a right hand. Or he might hard jab, soft jab, hard jab. You know, all these different variables that people don't really realize.
Yeah, that's that rhythm and timing. And the problem with Mike Perry, he's so aggressive, that which is good, it's taking more jab, but it's going to be hard for him to get a little more defensive oriented. And I agree with you, Rich. I mean, he really needs to work on it. But the concern is, you know, that old cliche, everyone has a plan until they get hit. And Mike Perry seems like the kind of guy you hit and wants to kill you. You know? So, and which makes him fan friendly. But he's not a worker. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if he's improved, but it's just so soon after that fight that it's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah, and we got Rohinen Barao, 34-5, back in action against Brian Kelleher, 18-8. That's the eighth fight of the night. And another female fight, Marion Renault, 8-3, fighting Sarah McMahon, 11-4. And female back-to-back fights, one before that is Angela Hill, 7-4, versus Marina Moroz, who is 8-2. And we've got lots of experience here. Alan Juban, 15-6, fighting Ben Saunders, who's 21-8-2. I think we've interviewed Ben Saunders before, too, if I remember correctly, but I don't know, could be wrong about that. Name sounds familiar. But then we got Marcin Prochniu, who is 13-2, fighting somebody we definitely interviewed, Sam Alvey. 31-10. Who?
Rayco Saunders.
Oh, Rayco Saunders, yeah. Well, that's, I definitely interviewed him. Ronnie Yaya, also on the card, but I don't know if I just mentioned. Sam Alvey, former guest of ours, 31-10, fighting Marcin Prochniu. Third fight of the night, Ronnie Yaya, 24-9, fighting Russell Doan, who's 15-7. Second fight of the night, Eric Shelton, 11-4, fighting Alex Perez, who's 19-4. And Albert Morales leading off the action at 7-3-1, fighting Manny Bermudez, who's 10-0, and he doesn't even have a shirt on picture. What's up with that shirt on? You made it to the UFC, but you can't get a picture on shirt on. Sorry. So that's about it. Upcoming stuff. I don't believe we have a Bellator card this weekend. Oh, let me check though. Bellator's next card is, yeah, the second, Caldwell versus Higo. So that's about it. If you guys got anything else to add to the mix?
The lobster tails are very good this week. I grilled them. I sent you the picture on Facebook. And I will be having, hopefully, the bisque and the chowder. I froze them, and hopefully, eat yourself.
Awesome. Well, that's going a long way, this Super Bowl bet.
Absolutely. I actually, the one player for the Eagles, I'm sure you've seen him pictures all over, the one that you know, did the profanity laced celebration speech dressed as a sequin mummy.
Yep.
He is
He's down visiting the Phillies spring training right now. And the place he went to breakfast, I know all the waitresses there, and they were sending me selfies with him.
Which, awesome.
Which now makes it the most famous person ever in that restaurant.
now, what is he known for? A profanity? What was the deal with that, Billy?
What I want you to do, Tom, if you get a chance to go on YouTube, you just type in Jason Kelce. That's K-E-L-C-E. Parade Speedy. And you've heard of the Mummers Parade in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah. Okay.
That's the New Year's Day parade where they all dress in like these gaudy New Orleans sequin looking outfits.
Yeah.
He went to the Eagles parade in a Mummers outfit, which is pretty impressive for a 6'3", 300-pound man. But he got up to do one of the speeches, and you could tell he was inebriated a little bit. And he was saying how everybody was writing them off, and he was mentioning players on the team. He's like, oh, this guy, he doesn't have it anymore. This guy's too old. This guy can't stay healthy. Then the one guy the year before that had been suspended for a few games for performance enhancing drug use, this guy can't stay off the juice. This guy, he's washed up. And some clown said our coach was the least qualified coach in the NFL. He just ripped all these people that doubted him to shreds. And then he goes, you know what? He goes, this makes you hungry. And he goes, hungry dog has got to eat. And he goes, and when you're hungry, he goes, you know, that motivates you. He goes, if I don't have breakfast in the morning, I'm fucking pissed off. Oh, 5 minutes and 30 seconds of this, Stacey.
And he mentioned pretty much everybody on the team and how they were, not expected to do this and that, and you're too old, too slow, can't catch, you know. It was good.
Too slow. This guy, he don't have it no more. This guy, he can't stay off the juice. This guy, he don't fit the system.
Yeah.
This guy, he should retire, you know.
That was awesome. Yes, definitely stole the show for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm thinking about doing it. I'm too lazy to try to grow out my own beard. Then it gets all itchy, and I really don't like it. I like keeping my goatee look, but I might wear a fake beard for Halloween and the Mummers outfit and go as Jason Kelce.
Nice. That's just the one thought that I had in my head, you know, knowing this is Philadelphia, this is your town. Your city, and you had the Halloween costume thing. I'm thinking, geez, wow, this guy has the Halloween costume of all time right there.
Yeah.
I was thinking you're going to try to beat it. But I guess if you can't beat it, you got to join it, right? But it was actually...
That Mummer suit, he actually went to one of the suppliers for the Mummer's outfit, and he's like, and you figure they won on a Sunday, and the parade's going to be on Thursday. He's like, I need an outfit by, like, Thursday. And then they're like, you know, what do you have for a 6'3", 300-pound man? So, like, they won. And by lo and behold, it just happened to be me.
Nice. There's another football story related to combat sports. Frank Fertitta III, I'm not sure if his brother as well, but former owner of the UFC there, is reportedly part of a group interested in buying the Carolina Panthers. Couldn't get the Raiders. The Raiders are not for sale, I guess, but they are still moving to Vegas, the Raiders. Probably going to be there by 2020. They couldn't get him in on that package, but I know Frank Fertitta III is still the CEO of Station Casinos, even though they're a public company now. So he's going to have to separate himself completely from the gambling industry if he does this, which is highly unlikely, but there's no mention of his brother in here, which is odd. And this is on a website called playusa.com. But it just talks a lot about the gambling aspect involved and, you know, the whole NFL policy with gambling and how it looks at it. And, you know, with the Raiders coming to Vegas, it's obviously going to put a different spin on gambling. But it's going to be interesting. See what happens there. We know that the UFC sale obviously left both Fertitta brothers with a lot of spending money. So I would assume if Frank's involved, Lorenzo's going to be on board, especially now that he doesn't have his UFC job anymore. And he is completely out of the casinos as far as I know. He might be like a passive investor, but he doesn't have any jobs inside Station Casinos as of right now. He never really liked the gambling, from what I've read. But there's the speech. Somebody found it. But yeah, Frank Fertitta III supposedly interested in buying the Carolina Panthers. So one more reason for me to root against the Panthers, if he does get it. But I don't think the NFL will approve him as an owner. I really don't, because actually he has kind of a checkered history with the company. And we're going to have to keep our eyes on that one, though, because they're definitely trying. Both the brothers are trying to get involved in a sports team. But the one parallel is their cousin, the guy you might have seen on CNBC, the billion-dollar buyer. It's another Fertitta there. He's the other Fertitta. Tillman Fertitta is owner of the Golden Nugget Casino, just one casino. Not a chain, but he also owns the Denver Nuggets now. Just bought them.
He's definitely a character.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so if you want to hear that, look it up. Tony said, Jason Kelce, K-E-L-C-E, Super Bowl speech. I definitely recommend listening to the unedited version if you can find it.
You've got to do the unedited version.
And until next week.
Now, it says right here, Jason Kelce, full unedited speech.
Okay, so, and I imagine the comments, you're up. Yeah, well, over 1,000 comments. So this is
all right. Well.
All right, guys. I'm going to enjoy this. Let's enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll do it up next week.
Yes, sir. Thanks for stopping by.
Over and out.
Hasta la vista.